T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
One time I said, Harry, did you pay your alimony payments? He said, yes, and I wrote a little note asking how long this is going to go on. And I said, about a month later, I said, Harry, did you get an answer? He said, yes. Honey, until death do us part.
Welcome back in on Hit and Run on the Score. I love that song because it reminds me of a great scene from Bull Durham, which I think is the best baseball movie of all time, Joe Ostrowski. And, you know, you think of baseball, you think of old-time baseball. I think of Bull Durham the way it really was. And the reason I like the movie so much is because it's so genuine. You know, that's the way minor league baseball really is, really was, still is. Jimmy Pearsall was a genuine baseball guy. 312-644-6767. I don't want to pretend that Jimmy was something that he wasn't. Jimmy, to a lot of people, was a mean guy. If you worked for the Chicago Cubs during the time he was on the air with the Score talking about the Cubs, mm-hmm. I mean, Andy McPhail, Ed Lynch, Dennis Fitzsimons, there's a lot of people didn't like Jimmy Pearsall, even though he was working for the team. And people like Doug Glanville and Corey Patterson and Rafael Palmeiro and so many outfielders that went through the Cubs organization who felt like they owed their defensive careers to Jimmy Pearsall because of what he was able to teach him. They absolutely adored him. But when he was on the air, he just said what he thought. Jimmy wasn't trying to get a headline. He wasn't trying to get you a sound bite, although the Score loved it. TV people loved it.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't trying to get you a sound bite. Jimmy was just being Jimmy. He was just saying what he saw, what he thought. But his honesty could be really biting and could be really cruel. But he didn't mean it to be. He didn't have a filter. I use the word unvarnished because I think of a table that's been put together with plywood and 2x4s or 4x4s that hasn't been sanded, that hasn't been polished, that hasn't been varnished. That is just what it is. It's just this creation. That was Jimmy. He didn't put any thought into you know, what he was saying in regards to how hurtful it might be or how cruel it might be thought of or how it might be received. He was just telling you, hey, this guy's bad. He can't play. Okay? That's all. Well, as a radio station or as a fan, you love that.
You don't hear that.
Well, you're not going to hear it today.
No.
Not these
days. And that may be the opinion behind the scenes. That may be what the team is talking about, but you don't hear that as a fan. And that's what fans are saying to each other. Jimmy came off as, okay, in the David Ross conversation, we would talk about why do people love David Ross so much? Well, it's like he's like an everyman. He's like a guy that you feel that you could sit next to at a bar, watch a baseball game for 3 hours, and talk about baseball for 3 hours. And that's how Jimmy Pearsall came off. A few years ago, I was doing a show late at night. It was probably 10 to midnight or something, 11 o'clock. And the phone caller on the screen, it says, Jimmy in Arizona. I just don't think of anything. I just click on it. is Jimmy Pearsall. What? I had no idea what he said. I let him talk for as long as he wanted, and it just blew my mind that Jimmy Pearsall was calling me to compliment me, and he wanted to talk about baseball.
Yeah.
And still, in his 80s, probably mid-80s at that point, sharp as a tack.
How many years ago was this? A few years ago?
Maybe 4 years ago.
Wow.
Puts him in his early 30s. And for me, I'm not a young man, and so I'm late 30s, and I'm sure many people listening, it's the same thing for them. How I knew Jimmy was from The Score. That was my introduction to Jimmy Pearsall. Then later, stories from like my father about him as a player, listening to him tell stories as a player. Then I would learn more about him. But how I knew Jimmy was The Score. And the amount of enjoyment and laughter that he brought me, someone that he never met, and many others in this city, in Boston. I mean, that's just a great compliment. He'll never understand. We would, Tom Scherer mentioned he'd be on The Score four times a week. I was listening every time. We would make sure, we knew when Jimmy Pearsall was coming on the air, whether it was with Murph, with McNeil and Boers, Jiggets and North, I would be in school. My dad would tell me what Jimmy would say. But we would make sure to be near a radio when Jimmy Pearsall was going to be on the air talking baseball for a half hour and taking phone calls from people too, which was probably the best part because caller would ask a question. Thank you for your call. And then Jimmy would go for 3 minutes and he would be tearing into somebody and it would be classic. Just complete silence if we're in the car, the garage, outside, listening on the radio. Complete silence with me and my father because we didn't want to miss a word of what Pearsall was going to say.
This hour on The Score is brought to you by Horowitz and Horowitz, Illinois' top personal injury lawyers. Terry Boers will call in at some point in the next hour or two, share some of his stories from the early days on The Score with Jimmy Pearsall. Bruce Levine will join us at 10:40. I'm sure he's got his share of Jimmy Pearsall stories. Tom mentioned that Jan would get all the clips. And so as Jimmy was a roving outfield instructor, if you don't know what that is, it means he travels around the minor leagues and works with all of the young players in the minors, teaching them how to play outfield. And Jan, his wife, would get all of the newspaper clippings from Chicago, from the beat guys, and she would fax them to Jimmy wherever he was. And every now and then, I'd be at home, or I'd be in Montreal, or I'd be somewhere else on the road, and I'd get a call. And I'd pick up the phone in the hotel, and I would just hear yelling. And Jimmy would be yelling at me because of something I had written about Kevin Roberson or Derek May or Doug DiCenzo or some outfielder. He'd just be yelling. He'd just be yelling. I don't know if he was mad at something I wrote or he was just mad, but he'd be yelling. And I'd be laughing, and I'd be like, Jimmy, calm down. What's your issue? And he would tell me why the outfielder was no good. Jimmy could make you laugh, I'll tell you that. You know who else could make you laugh, and still does, is a guy named Terry Boers. Let's go out to the Home Run Inn Pizza Hotline. Think outside the oven. Try a Home Run Inn off the grill this summer where we are joined by our old pal, Terry Boers, a Score original, a Score Hall of Famer, a Hall of Famer in my book, certainly. He's Terry Boers. Good morning, Terry. How you doing?
I'm doing well, Barry. And Joe, how are you?
Good morning, Terry.
I think there's, I don't know if I'm a Hall of Famer or all that, but, you know, listening to you talk about Jimmy is, there are, how many stories, Barry, you think there are Jimmy stories? Around a million? I mean, is that what we're looking at here when you think about it, going all the way back to his career?
I think that's probably a pretty good number, Terry. I haven't even gotten to my top 10, and I, you know, we'll try today at some point, but when you, there's so many. I mean, Terry, he just made me laugh all the time, on air, off air. Even when he wasn't trying to be funny, he made me laugh. When you think of Jimmy, what's the essence of Jimmy as you remember him?
Oh, just out of his mind. I mean, it's funny because there just aren't any, you know, you think about baseball characters today and everything has become, you know, at least mostly, there's still some out there, but nothing.
It's all sanitized. Everything's sanitized.
Yeah, it's just, you know, when, and believe me, he's also one of those guys that knew early on when he was working with Harry Carey to throw Bernstein out of the booth.
Yes.
Get out of here. The kid's making me nervous. Get him out of here. Well, Jimmy, welcome to our world.
Yeah, exactly.
But he was, you know, we went out to his house when we were at the Super Bowl in, I don't know, when the hell it was in Glendale, Arizona, probably early 2000s or so, maybe 1999, somewhere around in there. And what a night that was with his wife, who was just wonderful. You know, I mean, and we spent the jigs, and we, all of us were out there at his house. And Jimmy would just sit down and tell stories. I mean, I don't care what the story was, whatever it was. You name a player, Jimmy had a story. And, of course, the Ted Williams love and every other thing about him. But, I mean, there was, and he had some, actually, I think she had probably put together the memorabilia because Jimmy, you know, Jimmy, he wasn't really. But she had, there was quite a house he had. And he was, you know, early in the score, we were struggling for somebody who was credible. Because we had some tough luck. We had Ditka, which was good, and then we had Jimmy, and then we had Buddy Ryan. Remember, he never even watched the games.
Yeah, right. He had no idea what was going on.
I had no idea what was going on. He did not. So I mean, Jimmy was like this. Even though you never knew what Jimmy was going to say, you ask him a baseball question, it could be anything that was going to come out later on. But I was just thinking, you know, when I heard the news today, that how many guys do I know ever? Have you ever met in any walk of life, you were never sure from one second to the next what he was going to say or what he was going to do, no matter what you asked him? How many guys could you say you honestly didn't know what he was going to answer you?
A handful, at most.
He was, you know, when we had the 10th anniversary show downtown, 10th anniversary of the station, not our stupid show, but the 10th anniversary of the station, Jimmy was there. And he was in rare form that night. And Jimmy was a guy who he would sit around for a while, and then he'd want to wander. Because I remember somebody said to me, well, where'd Jimmy go? And I said, well, my guess is he put his little hat on and he left and he's walking the streets. And that's exactly what he was doing. We looked out and he was just walking up and down the street. And he'd had enough. He talked to everybody. He'd said, hello, how you doing? And then he just wanted to go out and wander around. And that's what he did. And, you know, I said, should we go get him? No, he's fine. He just likes to do that. He's fine. And he was. He was okay. But I couldn't think of anybody in the early days of the score, you know, other than Ditka, who was another guy out of his mind. But just kind of the expert you had that actually kind of knew what was going on, pretty much knew what was going on. And whatever the story was, he could relate it to something in his life. If you said to him, hey, what about this outfield? He knew. He could relate when he was still kind of pretty sharp, which he was with us for most times, could relate to any outfielder, any player you wanted. He could take him and compare him to somebody immediately.
It's funny, the story you tell, Terry, about him wanting to get out of the room and just wander around. There was nothing fun for him sitting at a table listening to a bunch of people speak or being part of a banquet or some sort of anniversary like that. He wanted to talk to people. He wanted to wander around, find people to talk to, engage with someone about something, and if possible, rip Tony La Russa, if at all possible. if he could possibly work that into the conversation, that's what he would do.
Well, you know, I wasn't going to argue with him there. He could rip him all day long, as far as I'm concerned. You know, we sat around, we talked, we sat with Jakes for a while, we just sat at the bar and swapped craft, you know, as we all do when we get together these things. And he was one of those rare form nights where he was just sort of out there, as he always was. And, you know, pretty soon, it's like, where'd Jimmy go? You know, we're just getting started with stuff where a lot of people were dropping by that had been part of the station and so forth. And we're going, well, where's Jimmy? I said, well, he was sitting right there. But that was an hour ago. And, you know, he puts on his hat and he's wandering around. He's on the streets talking to people. I mean, you're right, Barry. He just had enough. There was a certain limit he hit where he said, I'm done with this. You know, he saw everybody he wanted to see. And then he took his exit. I mean, and he finally came back. I think there was about four people left in the place when he finally came back. And he seemed fine. He seemed very happy. You know, that was Jimmy in a nutshell. He just didn't, he did from the beginning to end his way. I mean, I don't know how many guys I can say about absolutely from start to finish his way. I mean, he was him, and I don't know how many guys I've ever met in my life that are more unique than Jimmy Pearsall. And I've run into a lot of people over the years, as have you. So I don't know how many people I could say Nobody I knew was quite like that.
He was an all-time character, Terry.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
He was an all-time character. He ran around the bases backward when he hit his 100th home run off Dallas Green. He did TV shows with Lucille Ball. He was when I called him, and I'll talk a bit about I'll talk a bit more about this later. When I called him after he had been mentioned in an episode of The Sopranos, he was thrilled beyond belief that, you know, tens of millions of people heard his name mentioned on The Sopranos. But he said Jan wouldn't let him watch it because the program was too foul. And I,
you're married to Jimmy Pearsall.
Yeah. I mean, what a life, right, Terry? I mean, what a life. He touched so many different people in so many different ways, and many of them didn't like him. And I get that. That's okay. You know, I you would understand this as well as anyone. He wasn't in the business of trying to make everybody happy. He was in the business of being Jimmy. That's what it was. He didn't even think of it as entertainment. He was in the business of being Jimmy.
Yep. And I don't know how many guys you could say that about. You know, we've had a million experts, and everybody has them these days and so forth. And I don't know how many guys that when people watch this stuff, and I guess they watch a lot of it, how many guys you would absolutely classify and say, well, that guy, there's nobody quite like him. Well, the thing is today, guys, there's 100 guys like that guy that are just screaming at you and for whatever reason. But Jimmy, you never doubted, despite some of the quirks and all the other stuff, you never doubted his sincerity about it. It wasn't an act. This was not some act he put on when he came on the air. This was who he was. I mean, he was no different off than he was on. He was that guy. And I'm trying to think, next time there's a movie going to be made after a baseball player. When's that next one coming out that you say, this guy is movie worthy? I mean, it's just sort of like old ideas that, and actually it wasn't a bad movie. I know I hated Anthony Perkins.
He was the least athletic baseball player ever to play a baseball player. Jimmy hated that.
If he
hated that. He liked the Carl Malden guy because he said he even looked like his father. But he hated the movie because of Tony Perkins.
Yeah, what he was really saying, we can't say. But what I know is I've got nothing there.
No, dude, we're not going to go there.
No, I gotta say what he really thought of Anthony Perkins. But, you know, I just think how many guys, and like you say, it's a life that I don't know that anybody can duplicate. I don't know how anybody possibly duplicates some of that stuff and winds up where he did and what happened and, you know, all the stuff over the years, including the years of the White Sox. I mean, I don't know how many guys could ever say that. And that the fact is, he was himself every damn minute of it. There was never a time when he wasn't himself. He wasn't putting on an act. He wasn't just saying what you wanted to hear or any of that stuff. He wherever it was coming from, Jimmy was as genuine a guy, and maybe too genuine for his own good in some instances.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But I mean, that's how many guys do you know like that anymore?
No, there's nobody like that. There is nobody like that. We don't live in that. We don't live in a world that even allows that anymore, Terry.
We really don't. You're absolutely right. We don't. And it'll never happen again. So, no, I celebrate him. And not only as a guy, but for some reason, maybe I'm just as goofy as he is, but we always got along great. And I know you did too. So I never had a problem with him. We always used to have great conversations off the air too. And so he, you know, there was never a time when I ever thought, well, I had about enough of this guy. You know, because some guys you meet, and after a while, Barry, you just want to throw yourself off a cliff. Yeah, so why did I want to do this?
Some of them work here.
I mean, enough with the Bernstein talk already.
Get this kid out of here.
Well, Terry, yeah, that's how it came across. And I was a young listener at the time. I was like, I'm going to listen to this guy. I'm going to go out of my way every single time. I view this as must-listen radio, even though we label everything must-listen radio now, because he's going to tell the truth. He's not sitting there, who am I going to piss off today? There are a lot of people, unfortunately, in this business do, and you're so right about the impact of the early days of the station. Dicka nationally really put the score on the map, and big time in Chicago, too. But Jimmy, he was on just about every other day, and you couldn't get enough of him. You just couldn't. Was there a moment, anything that you think back to when you're on the air with him that really stands out, like one of your favorite memories of Jimmy on the score?
Oh, boy. sorry. I most of them are off the station when we just sit down and talk. You know, I mean, because a lot of the stuff when you'd sit down and talk with him, Joe, you couldn't sit down and talk with him about very long before you were just going hysterical. He was so funny about stuff. But I mean, just his there's so much Ted Williams love, and after a while, if you love baseball like I do and a lot of people do, that you understand. Yeah, I guess you had to love Ted Williams. He may be a cantankerous or whatever he was, but apparently, you know, never the Jimmy in there. But just some of those stories about him and the old baseball stuff. Stuff Barry and John, you never hear again these days because they don't, you know, there may be a little bit of it that may leak out. Even with all the coverage and all the people around, all the years, all the cameras, all the stuff that's going on. I mean, he would share stuff that I didn't think possible to share. That you know, I'm sure a lot of it was new to people. Because nowadays it gets out so fast, what they want you to, by the way, what they want you to hear.
Yeah.
But Jimmy never cared. I mean, he never cared. If you had to give him a name, a thought, a place, a time, a game, he had the complete, you know, his memory about this game or that game or that player or that situation was incredible. He remembered exactly. He could like be looking for some noise coming on and saying, well, it's kind of a slow week. Let me see what's in Jimmy's past. You know, the Cubs and White Sox are not winning the resting, so let's see what we got here. And here you would come with something. I mean, you could just find something and say, okay, here we go. All right, Jimmy, what about this? And he would have it immediately. Immediately he would have something to say. It wasn't one of those, because some guys you ask a question to and you don't hear an answer, which is really bad for radio.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. like Buddy Ryan always said, well, what do you think of Barry Foster? And that was the type of interaction. He didn't know who Barry Foster was. So, but never with Jimmy. I don't care because I wondered about when Score hired him. If is he too crazy? Is he too? And as it turns out, absolutely not.
No, he was perfect. Terry, great. I loved talking about the mechanics of outfield play with him.
Outfield play, yep.
Loved it too because it was like. You know, people who don't love golf can't stand listening to other people talk about a particular shot. Like, whenever I'm with Dan Rohn, we can sit around and listen to each other talk about a shot that we hit that we weren't even there to see, and it's fascinating. Jimmy was like that with baseball. And when you asked him a question about outfield play, he could give you chapter and verse and give you a half hour on how he would have done it, how he has seen others do it, and how that particular person did it. And, yep. I mean, you really have to love the game to be interested in that. And he, to the end, wanted to do that day after day after day. That's another thing I don't know that you get that much of anymore because even the guys who play the game today, even the guys who coach the game today, I don't know if they're that interested in it.
Yeah, I wonder about that, too. I think, you know, when he talked about just, like you said, this skill of being an outfielder and what it took and how he did it and what he thought about and what situation, whatever he was looking for and what he expected and the plays that needed to be made. I mean, I don't, you know, I know they're better athletes today. I know that it's a year-round thing. It's conditioning. It's there's not a moment time when they're, you know, starting when you're, what, 11 or 12 or something. You're not on some specialized team somewhere and all the other stuff that's changed. But the fact is, that of the guys who, there are still guys who aren't very good outfielders. There are still guys who could use 10, 15, 20 minutes a day with Jimmy Pearsall. Because I don't, was he the greatest? No, he wasn't the greatest of all time, obviously. Willie Mays could catch a little bit. A lot of guys could. But Jimmy breaking down the science of catching a fly ball, of chasing a fly ball, where you're supposed to do, what your footwork is supposed to be, nobody was better at it.
Terry, how you feeling? Everybody wants to know how you're doing, enjoying retirement. How's your health?
I'm fine. I'm okay. I got a little more some coming up, I think, probably in another month or so, but I have to kind of space things out. And by the way, the book is done on the Score. It's done.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
How much of the book is the Score?
Half and half. Half me, half the Score. But quite a bit of it's the Score.
Oh boy! When you pick it up, will it torch your hands? Will you get burned just picking it up? Will it hurt that much?
Some will. I'll let your imagination run wild on who that might be.
I'm already imagining, and it's probably not that difficult. Terry, it's great to hear. It's great to hear your voice. Everybody here misses you, and I'm sure everybody listening does as well. And We thank you for jumping in on a sad day, but a day to celebrate just an extraordinary life of some kind of baseball character.
Yeah, life well lived, my friend. Thank you guys so much for having me on, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Terry. That's Terry Bors, a Score original. Also knew Jimmy Pearsall very well. I'll tell some more of my stories later on. We got to get to a break. We know several of you are holding. Ron on the south side, I know you've been holding the longest. We'll get to you next. Jimmy, Frank, Bill, Stan, we'll get to all of you. Bruce Levine coming up at 10:40. Those of you on hold, please hang around. We definitely want to talk to you. It's Joe Ostrowski, Barry Rosner, remembering the life of Jimmy Pearsall here on Hit and Run on the Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Welcome back in on Hit and Run on the Score. Joe Ostrowski, Barry Rosner. As we spend our show today remembering Jimmy Pearsall, let's go out to the phones. And Ron on the south side, you're on the Score. Good morning, Ron.
Hey, Barry and Joe, you know, listening to Terry Bors talk about Jimmy Pearsall, Terry could have been describing himself. One of the most wittiest, entertaining people that I've met him and listened to him. So all the best to him. Love Terry. So I enjoyed that. Real quick, Barry, you know, I've been with this outfit from day one, and I've had a chance to attend a lot of fairs and meet a lot of people. But when I think of Jimmy Pearsall, and loving Jimmy as a Sox fan when I was young, and I would call Jimmy all the time, particularly on Marshall. So I was at the 10-year anniversary of the Score, and he said, hey, Ron Salter, and he said, I got something for you. And he pulls out this card, and I have it in my hand, and it was a baseball card, Jimmy Pearsall. He had the Washington Senators outfit, and he signed it and gave it to me. So you could go on talking about Jimmy. And again, they don't come like that anymore. Just love Jimmy. As Terry said, I was celebrating, but I have this car right here. And guys, just thanks for letting me get in. But love Jimmy Pearsall. And again, best to Terry. Okay, thanks, guys.
Thank you, Ron.
Thank you, Ron.
Ron sounding somewhat emotional when remembering Jimmy Pearsall. I get it. Jimmy, if you were a White Sox fan watching him with Harry, and if you were a scorehead in the early days, Jimmy was part of your day. Jimmy felt a little bit like a friend, maybe even part of your radio family.
If podcasting was around then, those would be everywhere. And a lot of people would be listening to them constantly.
If podcasting was around then, he wouldn't have lasted as long as he did as a member of the Cubs organization. Because as it is, at the end of 89, they McPhail and Lynch and someone from the Tribune Company asked for a particular recording of something that Jimmy had said on the air.
Mm.
And I'm pretty sure it was after the Riggleman firing, which was undeserved and it was wrong. It certainly was not Riggleman's fault. And Jimmy said something about those guys, and it wasn't long after that he was fired after 14 years as a Cubs coach, beloved Cubs coach. And a lot of tough love from Jimmy when he was your outfield coach, okay? But he tried to teach these guys how to play the game, how to play it right, and how to grow up in the minor leagues. And some guys didn't like it. Some guys didn't like it but learned to love him for the things that he said. Corey Patterson was one of those guys. Doug Glanville was one of those guys. Palmeiro called him after Jimmy was fired by the Cubs to say how sorry he was and to thank him for everything he had done for him. Palmeiro was the first baseman who didn't know how to play the outfield, and Pearsall taught him how, at least enough to get by while he was with the Cubs before the Cubs traded him to Texas. They asked for a tape of what he had said, and not long after that, they fired him. So the Cubs said it had nothing to do with it, but of course it did.
Of course they did.
Of course that's why it was.
As far as the tough love goes, I know it's hard to compare to real life, but it is for me. Isn't that like a lot of us where at the time you may not like them, you don't like to deal with it, but don't a lot of us think back to grade school and high school and some of the really tough teachers that we hated at the time, that we had at the time? And then you look back on it, they were really good for me. Yep, they set me on the right path.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think of the coaches who I hated, who could, you know, you thought they were just trying to take the fun out of the game.
Right. Why are they such a jerk?
But yeah. But the things that they taught you were the things that helped you win. And winning was what was fun. Winning is what's fun. They taught you how to, they taught you the ways to make sure that you could win a game. And it usually involved defense. And, you know, that's hard work. That's not necessarily fun. But that's how you win. And Jimmy was one of those guys. All right, we're going to talk to Bruce Levine next. Stan, Carl, Jimmy, and Frank, we are going to get to all of you, I promise. In the 11 o'clock hour, you're welcome to join in again at 312-644-6767. We'll take a glance at the text screen, too, the Grossinger text screen at 670-11. Get your reactions there. You can find us on Twitter and Facebook. And we'll do all that, but we'll get to Bruce Levine next right here on Hit and Run on the Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Welcome back in on Hit and Run on the Score. You know what that music means. It means it's time to go out to the Home Run Inn Pizza Hotline. Think outside the oven. Try a home run off the grill this summer where we're joined by the Score's very own Bruce Levine. You can hear him every Saturday morning on Inside the Clubhouse. You can follow him on Twitter at MLB Bruce Levine, and you can hear him right now on Hit and Run. Good morning, Bruce.
Good morning, guys, and what a terrific show. You guys have a great show every week, and I don't say that just because you're my partners in time at WSBR, but the fact is it's a fabulous show, and today is something special honoring the memory of our friend Jimmy Pearsall, who, guys, I talk to every week from the time that he became the Score baseball expert, and I was the baseball guy on ESPN, and he would call me every week, and he'd tell me, Bruce, gee, you're doing a great job, what great information, now what can you tell me about the White Sox? because, and you know, I knew, I wasn't that dumb that I couldn't figure out what Jimmy was doing, but I would give him my B and C stuff, and he would have stuff on the facts. You know, he had a lot of good sources with the Cubs, but he had nothing with the White Sox. You know, nobody White Sox-wise, as you guys know, would go near him. And I would give him a couple things every week, and we would talk. You know, certainly nothing that I hadn't put on my show, on my shows on ESPN, but that was, you know, the essence of the guy was he was just a beautifully flawed person, just a wonderfully flawed is the way you would put it, and very, as you said it, in this modern era of instant information and Instagram and Twitter, he wouldn't have lasted 5 minutes.
Well, the thing about it is, Bruce, is there are so many people today in this business, the radio business, TV, newspapers, social media, blogs, websites, whatever form, quote-unquote, journalism may take, there are so many people simply trying to make a name for themselves and see how loud they can scream, how cruel they can be, or conversely, how funny they can be. And Jimmy didn't try to do any of those things, yet at times he was all of those things. But he wasn't trying to entertain. He was merely being Jimmy, and maybe we use the term too frequently, but he was genuine and he was original. And it's just so difficult to find these days.
You know, Tom Scherer and Ron Gleason talked to me before they hired Jimmy and said, you know, we're going to need a baseball guy, blah, blah, blah. We're thinking about Pearsall. We want to talk to you. And, you know, at that time I said, well, you know, that's flattering, but, you know, Jimmy Pearsall was so sensational, so controversial, so what the Score turned out to be, you know, an in-your-face type entity that people could relate to because there was a lot of honesty and people weren't afraid to go on shows, either the callers or the people on the station, and talk about the truth and what they thought as a fan. And really the essence of if you're a fan and you have a voice, for the first time, you're really not that far off from all the experts. You're right there, and here's your avenue. And Jimmy personified that on the shows that he did on WIND years before the Score went on the air. I used to go on with him on his show back then, you know, people forget he was a talk show host and a really funny one and a good one. You know, if you ever want to hear Ted Williams on the radio, and if you can find it somewhere out there, Jimmy did about a 30-minute interview with him on his old WIND show with Williams, which is sensational. But, just a terrific guy. But, you know, a guy from a different era. He used to say to me, and this could be tough to hear for some people, but he used to say to me, you know what, you're different. I don't really like your people very much, but you're a different guy. And that was the era that Jimmy was from. He didn't mean it any other form of the fact that those people were different back then, and that you separated people from where you lived, their religion, their ethnicity, and it wasn't considered wrong in their minds. That was just how they were raised.
Did you do a Sunday morning a baseball show with him for a short period of time?
I did, a short period of time. He would come on, I think it was in the mid-2000s, he would come on with me, and, you know, at that point, I insisted he come on, but our program director were right. He didn't really have an information base, but he was just, you know, Jimmy being Jimmy, and he kind of had lost his fastball, but just the presence of Jimmy Pearsall was sensational just to have him around, and it was a different world, a different time, but what a sensational Chicagoan, what a sensational broadcaster he turned out to be. There's just so many stories and so many things we could talk about Jimmy, but he was a very emotional guy. I remember Jim Hendry telling me he was the director of the minor leagues when the Cubs let him go, and I know you guys talked about it while I was listening, and he said that he called Jimmy into the office, and they got that information that you guys talked about what he had said on the score, and they fired him, and they had Hendry fire him. And Jim told me how Jimmy sat there and cried like a baby for 20 minutes, and Jim felt as bad as he ever felt about doing anything, because he was firing, as Jim told me, the best outfield instructor maybe in the history of Major League Baseball.
Bruce, I never saw Jimmy play. I don't know if you did, but if you did, what do you remember about him?
Well, I did see him. I did get to see him play. I guess that dates me, but I think that's still okay. I just saw him do a lot of things. I remember when he was in Washington in 63, and I was at a game. I think I was 9 or 10 years old, and he caught the last out in the ninth inning. The White Sox had tying runs on base, and they hit a deep fly to him, and he caught it. And then he took the ball, and he fired it at the exploding scoreboard. That's the essence of Jimmy Pearsall. Of course, I'm sure people have already talked about him running around the bases backwards when he hit his 100th home run, and it happens to be off none other than Dallas Green. So that was, I mean, the history of him being hired by Green, you know, when he came to the Chicago Cubs to be the general manager, keeping him there, him being the guy that gave up his 100th and watched him run around the bases backwards, showboating at its best. I'm sure Dallas put a ball in his neck the next time that he faced him. But that was the essence of him as a player. But outside of Willie Mays, the best outfielder I ever saw. I'd go like this: Willie Mays, Ken Griffey Jr., Jimmy Pearsall, Devon White, Gary Maddox. Those are probably the five best outfielders I've ever seen play center field.
Wow, listening to baseball fans talk about Jimmy, that saw Jimmy play the field, and back then, the number that you have is, you talk about his fielding percentage, and the value today that is put on defense or defensive runs saved, however you want to look at it, Jimmy Pearsall would be one of the highest paid players in baseball in today's game, just looking at what Hayward got in right field, and he'd be in center.
AD, defensive war leader every year, and when you guys had Tom Scheer on in that great segment with Tom as well, and so great hearing Terry Bors as well. It was fabulous. Tom talked about the fact that Ted Williams was the left fielder on that team. That Ted Williams, you know, couldn't run at all. Jimmy Pearsall had to cover his territory and Ted's territory entirely. And his defensive skills and his defensive range was so great. It was just fun to watch him play. He played with such great energy. He said he was a horse blank
hitter. But if you look at the average, I think he was a 272 lifetime hitter. Right now, you know, he'd be making, you know, $10 million a year. So it was just was a great privilege to have dealt with Jimmy. Flaws like we all have, no doubt, but a guy that, you know, you never had a question where you stood with Jimmy Pearsall. It was right in front of you.
Bruce, there were certainly, he certainly had his detractors, and for good reason, because he said what he thought on the air. Among them, Tony La Russa, Jim Leland. I imagine that entire coaching staff, front office, and many of the players throughout some of those years. But they had reason, I would imagine, to not like Jimmy.
Well, you know, when somebody says, you know, that you know your wife was a horny broad and that's why she married you, I guess some people took umbrage with that.
And, I mean,
for those who don't know,
that's just people being sensitive now.
For those who don't know, that was Jimmy saying that on a TV program. I think it was with Mike Royko, and then the players and coaches found out about it, and yeah, that didn't go over very well.
No, I mean La Russa and Leland and two of the other coaches came to the studios to fight Jimmy, and Jimmy said, "Oh, gee, you guys are really tough, you know. I'm sure it's going to take all four of you guys to beat up a 55-year-old man." And so
to Jimmy's credit, he didn't take the bait.
No, he didn't. But I mean, that was the essence of Jimmy. And you know, they got on players. Him, you know, Harry used to bait him, and he'd get on players. And Harry wasn't afraid to bury players. You know, back in the Caudill Washington Slough Steer days, they were very entertaining. Whether the team was good or not, it was appointment television when Harry and Jimmy Pearsall were on TV together. It was sensational. You know, you never know what they're going to say. They're always going to tell you what they think type television. And I don't think there was anything like it before, and I don't think there's anything that's been close to it since.
Bruce, thanks for your time. Really appreciate it. We look forward to talking to you again next Sunday, and we appreciate you jumping in and sharing your memories of Jimmy Pearsall.
Yeah, our best goes out to Jan. I'm looking forward to remembering his memory in a memorial sometime in the near future. Thanks, guys. Have a great week.
Thanks, Bruce.
Thanks.
The Score's very own Bruce Levine. Yeah, I thought Joe driving in today, because I heard about it last night, and thought that, once the family decided it was time to release the information, that we could get a lot of people on the Score to talk about Jimmy Pearsall. And, it occurs to me that Jimmy, because he was so beloved by the fans, I understand he wasn't beloved by all players, coaches, managers, and management, that's for sure. Certainly the Tribune Company didn't like him. But those that did were those who listened to this radio station, and those who watched him on TV with Harry Carey, and those who knew him as a voice of the fan. And so we save this next hour for you. Rather than load up with a bunch of guests, we will take your phone calls and your texts and your tweets and your reaction, your memories of Jimmy Pearsall here on 670 The Score. Or back then, what would it have been, 1160? Or even
820, then 1160.
Then 1160?
Yes.
670 The Score. We'll do that for the next hour. And we'll remember Jimmy Pearsall. 312-644-6767. It's Joe Ostrowski. It's Barry Rosner on 670 The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.